Valuetown is a production of ChamMV TV. Find out all show information and details at chamMV.tv. Valuetown is directly supported by listeners like yourself via patreon.com/valuetown. What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 127 of Valuetown. I'm Chanman V, and I'm joined today by two distinguished guests. We've got from Team Tempo Storm and Father of Watchstone. We got Jesse. And what's up, buddy?
Not much. How's it going, Chanman?
Good, good. God, just that chill voice, man. That's why I love listening to your stream. It's because if I have a long day, it's been stressful, I just go to Jesse and stream, and it's like, everything is going to be okay, guys.
I don't know. I feel like some of the discussions today might get a little bit heated, but we'll see.
Gonna break. You're a pretty gravelly sweet voice. I agree.
And then, of course, we got our friend of the show from Team Splice, and I would say father of the rat race. The rat, what's up, man?
Everyone's a father these days.
Yes, of course. We're all fathers, man. But Noxious Guys is gone. He's going to be back next week. I think he's in Poland doing a Gwent tournament, of all things. So
it's a pretty big prize pool.
Yeah, so. It's like 100K.
Good luck to him. Life coach has been hard at work, though, for months.
It's a single limb 100K tournament.
This Great. Is like the official, like the first official tournament, right? And they just kind of went out the gates blazing here.
Yeah.
Prize pool, at least.
I think it's smart. Yeah. I think generally it's smart to try to get as much exposure as possible. But yeah, we got lots to talk about today. But before we do, I just want to mention that this episode is sponsored by Ting. Ting's a cell phone provider, for those of you that don't know, that is really, really great for folks that are tired of overpaying for their data plans. You know, so if you're the type that doesn't use much of your data and you pay like $40, $50 a month for it, then Ting's perfect for you guys, because you just pay as you go, and it uses the T-Mobile and Sprint network, and it covers a lot of phones too. You can go to value.ting.com and check out, see if your phone actually works or not. Get $25 off too with that promo code, and the average Ting bill is $23. So you get a free month, basically. I encourage you to try it. I've already had like a few people already try it and sign up, and they've been super happy about it. So check it out. All right, guys. So today we've got Wild on the menu. We've got HCT doing a Rogue Spotlight, because we've been doing class spotlights recently. EU China's been going on. Been pretty awesome to watch. And then, of course, Q&A at the end. But why don't we start with Wild? I know some of you guys were playing the Heroic Brawl, and especially especially Saiyan here, who like seems to just be farming off of these Heroic Brawls. But how'd you guys do?
Well,
Freeze Mage is good.
Freeze Mage is good? Okay. All right.
Freeze Mage is really good.
All right.
I think so many people got slow with Freeze Mage, and it really evolved, because at first people weren't playing Cold Ball or anything. They were playing Antonidas, and they were playing like a slower list, and then, the control shaman with a bunch of healing and stuff like that came in, and then Freeze Mage had to adapt, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they started playing Cobalt, and they started going more for OTK. So the list changed, and Freeze Mage remained getting like 12 wins very consistently day by day throughout the brawl.
Wow. Okay. How many times did you finish it? Or get 12 wins?
Five or six. Three on each server, basically.
Right. Okay. Nice. So Freeze Mage. Wow. All right. Brad, did you try it at all?
Yeah, I didn't have much time to play, but I played a couple on the first day when things weren't like all figured out yet. It was not I didn't do too hot.
So you played Pirate Warrior, that's what you're saying.
No, I didn't play Pirate Warrior. Okay. I played Tempo Mage.
Oh. All right.
I played Druid. I played different decks every time. I tried Patron, that was not a good choice. I tried Patron twice. Honestly, that's for like
Freeze Mage. Yeah, that's
probably discouraged.
That could be tough. But yeah, I ended up playing. I played two times, and I did Kazakus Priest. I did Kazakus Priest once. I did Egg Druid once, but only got eight. I got 8 and 6, so didn't do too well on this brawl compared to the others. But I don't know. I thought both of them could have gone. I think Egg Druid was doing well for a lot of other people. I think I just ran into a couple bad matchups in a row. And then the Kazakus Priest was fun, man. It's just like, okay, I have 30 cards that are all above average. This is awesome. But then, you know, you just mulligan wrong, or you just have bad luck in the mulligans and you get screwed. But open my eyes to Wild. I never played Wild much. I thought I had a lot of fun just, you know, getting decks ready and just playing whatever on the ladder, just getting ready for it too. And Blizzard recently announced, right, they're taking the top, or they have a tournament for the top 64 in Wild. So wanted to get your thoughts on that too. You think any the pro players or the HCT, you know, circuit players are going to try for any of these Wild tournaments? They're at, and I'll have you go first.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some people trying. I don't see myself trying. I DE'd all my Wild cards because they said it wasn't going to be a competitive format.
B. I did the same, yeah.
You did the same too? Why would you do that?
Because they said that it would not be a competitive format. So I figured I wouldn't need the cards. That being said, I don't think they released the details on the tournament yet, but I'm not sure it's worth the time anyways. But you'll definitely still see some people competing in Wild because they have nothing else to do. Like, Frozen is down for sure. He's already qualified for BlizzCon, so there's pretty much no reason for him not to try.
Yeah.
In Wild.
Yeah. I mean, Frozen should just be the poster boy for Hearthstone, right? Like, he just loves the game. It's actually insane. Like, you've made BlizzCon, but you still play 7 to 8 hours a day. It's a passion at this point.
Yeah, he like finished top 10 right last season.
That's great.
you don't even need the points. You're just robbing someone else of a top 10 finish. Less competition, right?
Well, it's one of those things where you want to keep up to date, you know, and I think the longer you wait, the longer, you know, the more of a, you know, just a ramp up you have to do last minute. And, you know, we saw a little bit of that. I think it was Tice, right? Tice last season qualified super early, and I felt like he just kind of cruised the rest of the year. And then, you know, kind of had to get ramped up, like, last minute. So it's good for Frozen to keep up. And I wonder if Wild, you think there's a future for Wild in just a separate HCT circuit?
I mean, it's a tough question. Like, in other card games, they have, like, multi-format tournaments. Like, a lot of the bigger tournaments are multi-format. Mm-hmm. But they usually include, like, a constructed format and then a non-constructed format, which is they call limited in other games, which for us that would basically be like Arena.
Yeah.
There's some tournaments that include double constructed formats, but I don't know. I don't know if Wild is enough different than Standard still yet mm-hmm. to like justify it being like, I don't know, a part of a tournament or something.
Well, it could be just like, I mean, it's not so much a tournament because, I mean, I look at this whole thing as a circuit, right? I mean, this thing feeds into a championship at the end. And I'm wondering if there will just be something that's equivalent to that. And, you know, it's something that you guys can still play too. You know, I think the qualifications right now are so rigorous for just Standard that it might be hard to do so if Wild is the same, you know, it's so time consuming. But you know, we see that with like poker, right? Like we see with the like, World Series of Poker, we see guys playing multiple events and sometimes it's pushing it, but it's cool seeing them play, you know, just your main event and then they're playing Omaha tournaments and they're playing all kinds of things. Right. I think it'd be kind of neat to see the Hearthstone players doing the same thing.
I think it's 50-50. Like they only have one tournament lined up right now, right? Which is the top 64. And I don't think their expectations for how it does should be super high because, I mean, a lot of people made that mistake. I made that mistake, right? Rat made mistake of like just disenchanting the wild cards because we thought it wouldn't be a competitive format. But yeah. I bet a lot of casuals probably disenchanted the wild cards.
I'd say they're even more likely that they disenchanted the wild cards because no one plays on the wild ladder. No one plays on the wild ladder. And they want to get dust for their other cards so they don't have to buy them with money. Where, like, I think that as professionals, we're even more likely to hold on to the cards because we don't really necessarily have a problem just spending more money because it's, like, our job.
Definitely.
And we could have held on to the wild cards in case something like this happened. But they were pretty, like, at the time, I personally felt like they were pretty adamant that wild cards weren't a thing that you were going to need to compete in the competitive circuit, so...
Yeah, it definitely had that type of feel every time they talked about Wild. Like, it was basically just this fun arena where anything goes, and they weren't going to support it much, you know? And having it be competitive, that's a little bit of a concern. That's always been my main concern with Wild being competitive, is that if they don't dedicate resources to balancing that, then it can easily fall into a bunch of negativity towards Wild. It's just because how the subreddits go, very, very quickly it happens, especially when one deck just starts to dominate like crazy. But overall, they might as well do it, right? I mean, so this is content that exists, and if they just kind of put it in the sandbox and nobody's using it, it's a complete waste.
I mean, I think that the bigger thing for me with the Wild Heroic Tavern Brawl and the Wild Tournament is seeing how easy it is for Blizzard to incentivize players to experience the game a different way, which I've talked about in the show many times. They haven't even announced what the tournament is or what the prize pool is. They just said, if you're top 64, there's a tournament for you. And all of a sudden you see Strifecrow, all these like big streamers streaming Wild, posting about Wild, getting their fans playing Wild. People are playing Wild, and no one was playing Wild, 3 weeks ago or whatever, 2 weeks ago. And it was so easy for Blizzard to do that with just like very little effort, in my opinion.
Well, it's kind of like Arena too, right? When they showed the leaderboards, all of a sudden there was just this huge influx of playing Arena for the next few weeks, or that month, that first month particularly. Their influence is huge. I totally agree with that. And I hope with the Wild that it ends up being something more, like much more different than Standard, not just a different metagame, because if the difference in the production and what's shown in format is really just different decks being played, then that's more the same, right? And we definitely don't need more of the same. We could use just I don't know what it is, but a completely different format for Wild. Nine deck format? I don't know. I don't know what it would be. Is there any element that you could think of that would be much more interesting with having all the cards available? Single class kind of things?
Honestly, if they want to go the route of having professional players compete in multiple formats, they'd probably have to design a sealed format, which I guess recently in an interview with Weibel, he was like, oh, it's something that's on our radar. Well, you know how that goes. But they have events like the Red Bull Team Brawl, where they do play a sealed format, but it's a fan-made sealed format and not like an actual sealed format that's encouraged by Blizzard, so...
You mean it's not standardized?
Blizzard didn't come up with the format.
Right.
A fan made the sealed.
Or Tempo Storm did. Whoever, Red Bull, or whoever organized it, Frodan. Sealed sounds pretty good. Sayan, what do you think about Sealed?
I think Sealed is great. It's always fun opening packs. It's just kind of hard, like on viewership, when you're opening the packs. And it's not as important because you lose a few viewers there, and the deck building process maybe isn't the most interesting thing. But it's hard to tell the story and get people interested. But in the end, the gameplay is definitely very fun. And trying it at home is also another thing, right? Because you get to open 60, 80, 90 imaginary
that
packs
is fun.
Start crafting your own decks, right?
Yeah. And if you guys haven't tried the Tempo Storm tool, go ahead and you should check it out, tempostorm.com. And I know they've I think it's the deck. No, it's the sealed tool is what it's called. You can I know the developers. I've talked to those guys, like Codephobia and those guys. They've worked really, really hard on it. And at this point, it's great. It's customizable. Before for a long time, it was just the format that they played at the original Red Bull's Team Sealed Brawl or Team Brawl event. Now you can actually change the number of decks from each collection and however many decks you want to build. So it's very, very flexible for whatever format. I agree with you there with just the production viewability of it being live. But I think as an edited event, it should be great. Like you can make the opening, highlight the opening of the packs, maybe even pick and choose like very key moments of building the decks. And I mean, we make highlight videos all the time. I mean, everybody in the community makes highlight videos. You could definitely do that and then have it lead into maybe a live portion of it. So that was the one thing I wish was, in this recent one and maybe the next iteration of the Team Brawl they'll do. But yeah, I'd love to see Sealed. You think it fits better in a Wild scenario than, I guess, a standard one?
Wild's always got a hard story to tell as well, just because so many new people play Hearthstone, right? Like, how are you going to try and catch people up on a year and a half worth of card history? People who have never seen Dr. Boom or people who have never seen Mad Scientist, all this kind of stuff. Like, if you join the game new, it's just like, where does the appeal of WoW come in? You're not going to spend that much more money on joining WoW, especially when the audience isn't that big. And it's like, it'll always be for the old guys, right?
Yeah.
Like, the people who remember Boom, the people who want to play Boom again, things like that. And it'll kind of escalate as we go in, like, Hearthstone's future. But, you know, it's hard to say right now, like, how much it picks up. Like, I don't know how popular Legacy is in Magic, but I think it's got, like, a similar effect as that.
Mm. I mean, it's like a... if you want to be a grinder, you like have to play Legacy at some point, probably in your career, honestly. Like, maybe not heavily, but decently, and like Modern too. But you also need to be able to play Draft and Sealed. So there's definitely like a lot of varying formats in Magic that you need to be able to play to like actually be successful in that ecosystem. But I mean, like Sealed, they could, if someone like really wanted to grind out the details and like make Sealed balanced, like chances are Sealed is imbalanced right now, so you need to make it balanced. And if
for sure
you can A, if you can balance it, B, if you can find a way to get people to understand the format easily or like readily, like that's a huge deal. Like in Magic, they have drafting and they'll gladly show you someone drafting their draft deck. Like that's like people actually just tune in to watch people.
That's the most
draft.
Fun for me. It's all that stuff before the actual play. It's like, I've seen the play a million times. That's not new.
Yeah.
It's the, everything else that's cool.
So, like, obviously with the Sealed tool as it is now, because so as a viewer, I haven't used the Sealed tool, probably. So I'm not familiar with the Sealed tool. I'm not familiar with the experience. So to me, it really is just you opening 90 packs. Like, I don't know what each card and each pack means for your Sealed deck. Like, I don't know, like, what's coming together. Like, I can see it maybe, like, a little bit, but I don't see it, like, so readily, like, as I do in Magic, where I could see you open a pack and get one card, and I'm like, wow, I know exactly what that card does in this format because I've played this format. Oh, you got that card to go with that card? Okay, well, now I know exactly what's going on. It's like, yeah, I can see, like, maybe that you have Bran with like a few battle cries, like, and I can see it come together, but there's like the little synergies that might not be as obvious that I necessarily like don't see, like even something like getting like, I don't know, two glaive Zookas with like some decent one drops or something if you were like playing Hunter, let's say, in Wild. So it's really hard to tell the story, like saying that if the people watching aren't familiar first off with the cards, or if they're not even familiar with the format. Because then all they really know or understand from it is like the actual gameplay.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, again, this is going to be the first Wild tournament, so I'm hoping there's going to be a lot more to come, and hopefully more formats, and you know, maybe Sealed in the future too. But speaking of Wild and maybe some Wild Wings, why don't we talk about HCT and just the spring season? Originally, I was just going to talk about the prelims, but you know, earlier today, the championship site was actually announced, and it is none other than
Buffalo Wild Wings.
It's a Buffalo Wild Wings in China.
In
who knew? Who totally knew? No, just kidding. It's in Shanghai, and it's going to be at the Silver Hall of the Expo Center, which is this building right here. So, yeah, it's going to be moving over from a tropical locale to more of a, I guess you could say, a tech city or just a very huge metropolis city. And what do you guys think of that? Shanghai.
Well, Shanghai's very cool. Mm-hmm. If it's like nightlife or if you want to see what's going on in China, it's definitely one of like the best cities to go to for sure.
What's the nightlife
you can
there?
Do
like,
stuff, right?
What's the nightlife?
Yeah, I've never done nightlife in Shanghai. What's it like?
I mean, it's just bright. It's colorful. It's like, you know, like how Japan is kind of like that, the color scheme and things like that. Yeah. Shanghai's kind of got to feel like that as well.
So the neon lights and everything kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not talking about like partying. It's just
sure
like,
you're not.
It's like the Bahamas, sure. Right? Like you have things to see, you have things to go to, and it's a different vibe, but it's right. Got its tourist attractions.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think that the reason that it's in Shanghai and what's so exciting about going to Shanghai is that when you look at just numbers, Hearthstone is wildly popular in China.
Oh, God.
It has lots and lots of fans. And if you're going to fill an arena, to watch, have people watch people play Hearthstone. It's not going to happen in America. It's not going to happen in many countries in the world, but China is actually one of the countries where you can sell seats to watch people play Hearthstone.
That would be amazing.
In an arena setting. And I think that's what they're going to go for with this. And I think that's the goal. And that's why it's in Shanghai too, and not a different city. Like they could have picked, if the Bahamas is like obviously a destination location that's pretty or whatever, but it's not necessarily like a capital or a huge city, where Shanghai, you know, is,
yeah,
it's Shanghai. So yeah,
it's good that they have different, you know, like a different flavor for each season. And I would kill to see a large, you know, expo center or whatever like this, completely full of people cheering at you know, Sulphurous plays and things like that. I think that would be pretty amazing to see in Hearthstone. What's the biggest crowd we've ever seen, like live crowd? Do you guys remember?
Probably. Well, I mean, outside
of like DreamHack or something like that.
Outside of BlizzCon, yeah. Probably the European 2015 BlizzCon qualifiers.
Was Skaka versus Tice?
Where no. That's BlizzCon.
What was that?
The tournament where Pavel threw against Life Coach and Skaka qualified to BlizzCon.
Where was that though? Like what venue was that?
It was in a stadium, that's why. Like they had seats. Like I don't know if that was like the biggest. There's got to be bigger crowds. There's got to be bigger crowds in China, honestly.
Sure. I'm just trying to think.
But in terms of like Western events, that's the last time I remember seeing like an arena. It might be one of the only times I've actually seen players play in an arena that I remember, at least. Because I know like in Korea, they also played when they had the OGN League and stuff. So
yeah,
they played in like a studio. But
that'd be pretty hype, man. How do you guys feel about playing in an environment like that?
I'm down.
Yeah. Okay. So not distracted, and you could be focused.
I mean, I'm gonna be more focused on an arena stage than I am a Buffalo Wild Wings.
Oh man. Okay. Sayan, how about you? Let's just say, like, you had islands in the crowd, and you're like literally sitting on your own thing, surrounded by people. Would you have a hard time focusing at all, or no?
I mean, just give me some shades or something so I can't see the crowd, right? Like, you want peace and quiet in the end. Mm-hmm. It's, you don't really know how nervous you get until you get there, right? And then the hand starts shaking. Like, you don't foresee that kind of stuff. Like, I think I'm calm at most points, but like just like recent DreamHack, I played, I think, a lot better in Swiss than I did on camera. And it's just, it does affect you to some degree. Right, especially if you're not 100% prepared. Like, if you've thought through everything and you know every option with your deck, and you feel very confident with your decisions, you can still second guess yourself.
Yeah.
In those moments, it's not guaranteed. It's just, you don't really know until you get there.
Right.
Is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, even DreamHacks is like, so I've played in obviously a lot of tournaments. I've been to a lot of different venues, and even like the most recent DreamHack at Austin, at one point there was like a band playing right next to the play area. And I have my music with my headphones in, like, full blast. I still hear this band over my headphones. And it's, like, it's one of those parody bands that's, like,
yeah.
You know, like...
Oh, parody
wake bands. Up in the morning, got stinky socks on my feet. And it's, like... And I'm, like, sitting here trying to play Hearthstone. And then they also have, like, a light show in front of them. And it's, like, the lights are just, like, keep hitting your eyes. And there's, like, nothing you can do. So you're, like, sitting here like this with, like, your hands on each side of your eyes. Not because you're thinking hard, which I already do this, but just because you're trying to get the lights to stay out from blinding you, and you're listening to like this guy talk about like his morning routine and song form,
and you're
just trying to like play this game of Hearthstone, and Chalky's taking forever because he likes to write down every single card that's played when he plays in person because he's a huge note taker, which is fine, but it's like that coupled with me waiting for him, coupled with like this light show and this like. Songs going on. I can see
you just like those are pretty funny lyrics actually from the song that you're listening to it.
That's not what I was thinking in the slightest though. I was more like who is this bozo? Stop this, please. And the lice. I'm
the table's like shaking. The rat's like shaking the table, about to rage.
Oh, when you play at like when you play at like the Onog events that are at PAX and stuff, like the one at PAX East, it was right next to the HP booth, and they had like intentional like loud noises for like the League of Legends that was being played there, or whatever. And the ground was shaking, like legit. So yeah, it's like the circumstances in which you find yourself playing Hearthstone at these events is it's crazy. Like, because when I first went to events like the ESL at the ESL studios, like a lot of things, one of the first things people, not as much anymore, but then they found out is like they put white noise in your ears, and some people just can't play with white noise. Like, I know Sidonia has been like, he like talked about the first time he had white noise in his ears and he just like couldn't concentrate at all, and he's like, what is this? So like, after I played with white noise, I came home and like played with white noise just at my
house. You have to train for that. That's something you're not going to be able to get away from, because white noise is standard for almost any eSport event.
Just like colder. If it's colder, like I played with like the air conditioning on, like pretty cold and stuff like that, just to get used to it. But then like you go to like PAX and all of a sudden the floor is rumbling and you're right next to like this loud speaker and you're like, well, I don't have a loud speaker to set up next to my computer. I don't know. It's like it's actually just crazy how many things are going on at these events that could distract you.
That's funny that you talk about that, because I remember talking to StarCraft 2 players that would train environmentally too, and they would turn off their AC and like sweat it out and like play on zero sleep just to train for those type of scenarios, traveling and things like that. It's kind of funny that you mentioned the same sort of thing with Hearthstone to a degree. But yeah, so the championships are going to be Friday, July 7th through Sunday, July 9th. But before we even, you know, get into the championship, we've got to figure out prelims, which was the big news the last couple days. So the cutoff happened, and the cutoff for NA was 19 points. I know there was a lot of question as to what was going to be the safe amount and 66 NA players. Why are you laughing, man?
Some people just barely slid in there.
Dude, Immortal Lion was
maybe even got
sweating.
A little bit lucky.
Well, how so? How'd they get lucky?
I don't know. Let's ask one of them.
Well, let's see.
How'd you get lucky, Sam?
I had 7 points going to last month. Then I top eight a DreamHack, and then I got 17 on a ladder finish. I played like all of the last day after the top eight, and we're done for DreamHack. I just went back to the room. I grinded ladder, and I got lucky the last day to finish number 17. So I barely slid in at 19. It was pretty crazy. I figured I was going to give up on prelims until, you know, those two things happened. It's pretty insane.
Wow. That's when things line up really, really well. So 66 players in, and, you know, the big thing was, all right, where is everybody going to go? Because last season, the sites were pretty good. You know, I think there weren't that many complaints about the sites last season for winter prelims. But this season, obviously a completely different outlook, because the sites were announced, I believe, a day and a half ago. And I was talking to the rat here, and Noblord posted just a map, which let me show you guys the map just so you can get a clear picture of at least what the locations are for North and South America, at the very least. And keep in mind that the European region has 25 of them just in, you know, just here. So this is what we got for North and South America here. And, you know, obviously we're going to speak from North American standpoint just because we're all in North America. If you actually look at where the locations are, there's not much on the East Coast outside of Florida. And I believe there's one in Georgia too. But North, like just or at least mid-East Coast, there's nothing there. And then on the West Coast, there is one in Cali, or just one in that I'd say mid to South California area, but
it's like south of the previous location, which was in Santa Ana.
Yeah.
So it's in Lake Forest, California.
Yeah. So south of that. And you know, Esports Arena was a very popular site, and I think a lot of people are happy with just the arrangements there. So they didn't choose that this time around. On top of that, if you look at the list of the vendors that were chosen, there are like 6 or 7 Buffalo Wild Wings listed on there.
I think there's 5.
There's 5. Okay, 5 Buffalo Wild Wings on there. Yeah, 5. There, it's on this tweet. There's 5 Buffalo Wild Wings on there, and I mean, there's a lot of other vendors too, or just other locations too. But that sticks out the most, I think, to most people. And I can speak personally because I've done my firesides all at Buffalo Wild Wings here in Florida, and it's a very surprising choice, let's just say, for a venue. Just because the internet for me was not, they have not been like the greatest. Thankfully, my firesides have been, you know, more like 30, 40 people. So it's not hundreds of people or anything like that. So we've been still able to do it. And, you know, we chose it because it's a festive environment. You know, it's loud. There's food. There's drink. There's a lot of laughing and talking and things like that. But it's not the type of environment I think is great
would
for
HCT.
Would
you say it's a modern day tavern, Chanvan?
I wouldn't say. Well, I guess if you call a sports bar a modern day tavern. But for the Hearthstone demographic, I wouldn't say it's a tavern that matches that thematically. Let's put you that way. So it was surprising. It's definitely very, very surprising. I quickly realized that a lot of people, you know, other players were reacting the same way. So I want to first get your thoughts on A, the locations, just the distribution of the locations or the geographic distribution, and then just the Buffalo Wild Wing selection. So Sayan, have you start?
We're going to Vegas.
We're going to Vegas. Okay.
I'm not taking the risk on Buffalo Wild Wings because you have to win two 50-50s here, right? Like, one is the venue has to be closed off instead of open. So that's your 50-50, mm-hmm. Which we don't know if it's going to happen or not. And the second 50-50 is good internet, which I think is a losing bet on that side. So we're going to go to a venue in Vegas that we've been to before that has good internet. So
okay.
I just old reliable, something that works. I don't like taking risks for prelims.
Yeah. I mean, you guys work so hard. I mean, just the 3 months. I mean, I've heard all the stories of grinding cups and just crazy ladder and taking a chance on this going wrong for external reasons is really, really risky.
Sometimes you don't even have to play the ladder. It's great.
Yeah, right. You didn't even finish ladder, right? I heard you got all of your open cups.
I only got one extra point from the ladder.
What? Really? How did, like, what's the distribution of your points?
Open cup, open cup, open cup. 3 points from Legend Ladder, 1 point from a top 200, which I didn't even need in the end. I could have got 19 points instead of 20 and still qualified, so I could have qualified without even playing on the ladder.
That's wow.
And
that's
I got
crazy.
2 points from one top 16 of a major.
Yeah. The man.
But even if
awesome.
I didn't attend that major, even if you didn't attend, if you were in prelims last time, mm-hmm. you came in first in three open cups and you got Legend 3 times and you would have qualified.
Yeah, yeah.
So you actually didn't even have to play to finish on the ladder to qualify. That's from America, though. In Europe, they need more points, and that's not a reasonable thing in Europe. You're going to need at least one ladder finish,
yeah.
I believe. Because they needed, like, I don't know what the cutoff was, 24?
24. It was a lot higher. It was.
I'm not sure. But
I think
yeah,
it was 24,
so,
yeah.
Might have been 25 even, but so they can't do that. But NA players can basically choose how they want to experience the game, I guess, in that sense. I don't like the ladder at all. And I'm a huge
not
fan
a huge
of
watch
player,
huh?
Tournaments. So. Yeah.
All right, so what side are you going to, Rat?
I haven't decided yet. Pretty up in the air. It's obviously like a pretty hot topic, like the locations and stuff. I'm hearing rumblings of a possible East Coast location.
Popping up, like a new one?
Popping up.
Okay. I mean, why not?
Nothing,
if you can get it.
Nothing confirmed yet. This is what's really interesting. And it's like, it's not even that, I mean, okay, it is for a lot of people that they don't want to play Buffalo Wild Wings. Like, personally, the Buffalo Wild Wings location works really well for me, and I still won't be attending it out of the premise that I don't want to support players going to Buffalo Wild Wings. I don't want to give it a shot. Basically, like, even if it was like 5 minutes from my house, I would still go somewhere else.
Ouch.
Just okay. Based on principle, like, I want to show them that I don't support this as a concept. Mm-hmm. There are some good venues that were chosen, like the Raiders Esports in Toronto. I've been there. I played at prelims there. That's a good venue. GameWorks in Seattle, I guess, is a good venue. What interests me is that they have such a wide array of venues. Like, they weren't consistent at all. It's not like they only have Buffalo Wild Wings, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like they have some Buffalo Wild Wings and
yeah.
some of the original, like, venues or some of, like, the better venues.
Right.
And they definitely dropped the ball by not having an East Coast venue. And then when you add the Buffalo Wild Wings and you kind of have this thing where it's like, we want you to play Buffalo Wild Wings, all of a sudden people on the East Coast are like, we have Buffalo Wild Wings here. what the hell happened? You know, it's like we could have easily went to one of our Buffalo Wild Wings.
Well, I think,
and since they're flying out admins to go to like the different locations, and it's not like the location has to be where an admin's at, they're bringing admins to locations. I don't see any reason why there isn't a location in the Northeast. And they do have the player distribution to look at. Like, they could actually look at the player distribution and they know where those players live. So they could even like tailor the locations to be able to fit where the highest density of players are.
Yeah.
Which would be, you know, unfortunate for someone who lives in like Alaska, for instance. But that's just how it is, you know. You got to go with where the demand is. So, but it doesn't even seem like they did that. So, I
think
that,
I mean, it has a little bit to do with organizers too. You know, I think that's at least a little bit of an element. You have to have somebody that's actually arranging these you know venues, and there's got to be somebody locally, which I know they usually bring in to, you know, to train them or, you know, give them the lowdown, or at least the teams do. But you know, each of these sites requires at least one person or two people just getting everything together, right? Just working with the Buffalo Wild Wings or whatever, and getting, you know, making sure everything's is there. So maybe there was some issue with that. I mean, I can imagine everybody that did it last season would probably be up for doing it this season too, unless it was total disaster.
The Esports Arena's done it every single season, and they didn't even ask them this season.
Yeah, so I don't know. So, maybe trying to give opportunities to other folks too. I don't know. But
I mean, they replaced it with the Buffalo Wild Wings, and they're going to have to fly somebody in to handle that, or they're going to have to bring someone from somewhere to handle that, because that area, I'm pretty like familiar with the area and all of the, like, it's not like there's fireside gatherings there or whatever. Like, there's not like there's an established admin base there.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like a couple of the other areas, it's similar. So,
okay,
I guess like it's a little. Once you find out that they're actually bringing in talent basically to manage the Buffalo Wild Wings locations, then you realize they're like definitely trying to accommodate, you know, like the Buffalo Wild Wings and like make sure that they work out. So I think it's definitely some type of either partnership or partnership ideal.
Some deal that's being
worked out
for the
future.
Yeah.
Or they want to see how it works out so they can do it in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they want consistent branding and all the prelims are played at Buffalo Wild Wings, which is naive in my opinion, because I don't think that even if you made all the prelims players play at Buffalo Wild Wings, that this would be like a thing that the public like went and watched, because I don't think that the public wants to go in person to a Buffalo Wild Wings and watch the players play for prelims necessarily. All the players aren't in the same location, so you don't necessarily know who's going to be at the location you're going to. So it's not like I can just say, oh, I'm going to go watch the prelims, my Buffalo Wild Wings, and Strifecrow is going to be there in person. So
yeah,
once you don't know where the players are going to be in person, they could just play online and you could go to Buffalo Wild Wings to just watch them play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to lead to next, is whether, you know, this whole concept of having, you know, different sites and even just taverns, bars, whatever you want to call it, you know, just sites that may potentially have been fireside sites in the past, or just the general concept of having a fireside with the prelims is even necessary. You know, like, I get having locations around, you know, the US, around, you know, South America and everything, just so people can go, you know, and you know, have some kind of streaming set up, you know, and there is some kind of production to it. But why not just pick the best places and that's it? Like, who cares if everybody else gets a different, you know, gets a chance to organize their own prelims? Like, I don't really care about that for the players. I just want the players to be able to, you know, be in some kind of production, you know, so we can all see it stream-wise, and, you know, be maybe in their hometown or something kind of close to that. But as long as they're doing a good job, whoever's at that site, then just keep doing that. Just keep using the same site over and over again. Like, don't change something that's already working.
I mean, there's a lot of...
It's so hard to sustain that, though, right? Like, the whole move with Buffalo Wild Wings is just consistency and reliability, right? Like, site managers change. I mean, Blizzard can't curate individual sites all the time for every single prelim. And they have to keep track of who's managing that place. They have to keep track of, you know, sending out the devices, making sure that the internet is good there, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's a lot of factors, right? But if Blizzard just makes a partnership with Buffalo Wild Wings and says, we give you, you know, 150 PCs to spread across these locations so you have what it takes, and then we help you upgrade your internet,
Okay, sure. It
gets done. And they can also, like, put some of that responsibility on Buffalo Wild Wings for them to manage themselves as well. So It's just like, in the end, consistency and reliability, and plus this partnership just makes sense. But as a player, like going into the first prelims where Buffalo Wild Wings takes so much coverage, is just like, I mean, I'd rather go with what works in the past at the moment, but I can see where they're going.
No, I mean, I think those are good points, but it's a much different thing when it's announced that, hey, Blizzard's partnering with Buffalo Wild Wings to run these prelims because of all those things you mentioned logistically, you know, and the reasons why. It's different when they're just, hey, guys, Buffalo Wild Wings is just showing up on the list, you know, for sites, and everybody's wondering what the hell, you know.
But that's the thing, right? It's like, I understood that you, like, you have successful firesides at Buffalo Wild Wings. It's like, in Florida, maybe we make that a venue and see how it goes, but you don't take away the other venues in order to, like, accomplish that. And there's a little bit more that goes into it. It looks like Racy just tweeted that the Cave is now a prelim venue.
Okay, great.
He didn't include any, I don't see any proof, but...
And the Cave's in Virginia, by the way. Yeah, it's a very good one.
Esports location. Given what I've heard, that would make sense that happened, because I think that that's something that was going to... that was being looked into because of the lack of an East Coast location, so...
Okay, that's good. I mean, it's good that, you know, these sites, if they're willing to do it, you know, Blizzard's adding more sites to the map now.
There's other ways to look at it too. Like the guy who is in charge of the firesides there, his name is Weva. I've met him a couple times. He's a pretty passionate Blizzard fan and like gamer, and he's pretty passionate about Hearthstone and organizing the events. So the fact that they didn't contact him originally and that he was taken by surprise when his venue wasn't listed and he hadn't been contacted, it's a little concerning, especially considering the fact that he had, he had actually gone to, like, they had, like, a summit of admins at one point of innkeepers, and he went to that. And people don't really, like, realize that the innkeepers throughout the country are actually connected, and there's various ways they do that on Facebook and in groups and whatnot.
Right. And they've, so, like you said, they've all flown in, and the Blizzard team has
trained them, at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At least I know before the last one, I believe all the innkeepers that hosted the last one flew in and were trained. Like, I know Amy and Orlando did and a few of the others. So they, you know, it's smart of Blizzard to do that. They have to, you know, have to make sure that they understand what the facilities needs and, you know, just what the requirements are, even just for an environment for the players.
So to be clear, Buffalo Wild Wings would never be ran by the Buffalo Wild Wings staff. Just so people are aware, like, they would bring
in some of these innkeepers.
they would bring in some of these innkeepers from other areas in order to supplement the venue staff or whatever.
All right, so yeah, I guess we'll have to see what happens. The Buffalo Wild Wings thing is obviously going to happen, and I'm sure some people will be playing at those venues. It could all work out in the end, guys. Like, you know, they might have had a lot of arrangements with Buffalo Wild Wings we just don't know about, and maybe they shut down the whole place the whole day, so it's literally quiet the whole time there. And I'm just saying, there maybe they've already done a lot of this planning that we
you're optimistic and you're hopeful, and I like it. But honestly,
somebody's got to play this.
It's really tough to imagine, because Buffalo Wild Wings isn't even a place that has like event rooms. Like Chuck E. Cheese has event rooms that you could put players in. Like Buffalo Wild Wings doesn't even have event rooms. Like, as far as I'm concerned, I would rather play at a Chuck E. Cheese than a Buffalo Wild
Wings. What Chuck E. Cheese you have? All my Chuck E. Cheese have like giant open rooms, dude. I don't know what you're talking about.
My Chuck E. Cheese has an event room.
Really? Mine's just wide open. The stage is right there with all the video games, too. So, that's okay. What were you saying, Zayn?
I mean, they have to shut the thing down right then if there's no event rooms.
No, they don't.
They're not going to make you play in the open with like at your own table with other people eating.
Are you sure?
Well, there's a bar area, at least in the Buffalo Wild Wings.
That's just a fiasco for everyone. Like, that's terrible for Buffalo Wild Wings. It's terrible for Blizzard. Like, there's no way they do that.
I mean, you say that, but...
I mean, I do remember how E-League went with Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, so some of the E-League venues with Buffalo Wild Wings didn't go too well, and that's why I thought that this partnership was interesting, given the situation.
Oh, I don't know anything about that. What happened there?
Well, the E-League and TBS partnered with Buffalo Wild Wings to show the E-League on some of their screens, and some of the Buffalo Wild Wing locations, managers and people there were not friendly or kind to the situation, basically. Mm-hmm. But this is a little bit different because it's a viewing situation where I'm just going to watch. So let's say I go to Buffalo Wild Wings and they're not showing it because the manager is against esports or whatever, and the people around me are unruly or unhappy with like that, I just leave, you know? Okay, I don't get to watch E-League at Buffalo Wild Wings. I get to watch in my house. But if I'm a prelims player and I go to a Buffalo Wild Wings location and something goes wrong, A, I'm not where I'm from, so I'm actually completely out of my element, so to speak, because I'm in a different city. And this is something that, like you said, I qualify for and it's really important to me. And all of a sudden, I'm in a scenario where a lot of stuff's out of my control. If you think back to like the European prelims last season, a couple of locations had to close because of time, and then the innkeeper had to like bring them to his house to like play and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just you want to avoid problems like that. And I just don't feel like you do that by introducing this new element that they feel like maybe they have more control over in the future. I guess like Buffalo Wild Wings. I mean, this kind of goes back to what I said originally before on the show, right, Chairman, where I said like, I want to see grassroots movements where you encourage people to play on a local level. If they did that and they were better at doing that, then this wouldn't even be a problem, because when it came time to host the prelims, you would have locations throughout the entire country that you know are reliable. And you would know that because they ran, you know, a number of successful events. Mm-hmm. And they were passionate about Hearthstone and they were passionate about admining. I think Frodan commented a bit on a post on Reddit and he had a few points. And I mean, some of his points were from a marketing perspective and they were solid, but a couple of his points didn't really make sense if you've experienced the prelims. Like he said that locations with only two people, for instance, had like the guy didn't care about two people, so he didn't admin as well. But I mean, there's locations that have more than two people where the admin didn't know what he was doing.
And that brings
up
the question.
It's not necessarily a case of how many players, right? It's a case of how passionate the admin is. And you get the admin passionate by having, you know, it at a location where someone's ran multiple Hearthstone
events. I still feel like I still question a bit whether all of these sites, I don't have a solution. I don't have an alternative solution. So it's one of these things where I'm just, you know, going to critique the current thing. It's one of these things where I don't know if it really brings that much more, you know, because how many people actually go? I mean, I know Esports Arena had a bunch of people, but let's just say some of these other sites around the country. How many people are actually there watching? And their viewing experience is basically just something up on a big screen, and the guy just happens to be over in the corner playing. And I mean, it's not much more than that, right? You get a chance to maybe interact with that person, I guess. But other than that, it's just maybe a fireside with some notable people at it. Is that what we're talking about?
See, and that's like what's interesting, because Esports Arena, you actually play upstairs. And I've met a few people when I played at the Esports Arena that like came to watch, but like the experience necessarily wasn't what they were hoping for. Mm-hmm. Which you could argue is like on the venue, but ultimately if Blizzard had more standardized, had been working to more standardize the event, then there would be something for venues to like go off of. But what you're talking about is actually even more interesting than that, because now let's say I'm at a B-dubs. Let's say someone shows up and they want to meet me, but I'm playing or I'm in the middle of playing lost.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like if I just lose, I'm more personable than most people actually after losing, or like just in general with talking to people who aren't involved. Like the extreme on this scale, if anyone follows different scenes, would be Laffin, who plays Melee for TSM. Like, he doesn't sign anything in between rounds.
Right.
He doesn't talk to fans in between rounds. Because originally when he first came up, he got so much attention and so many, like, you know, people that he just, like, he's like, I can't do that anymore. And it's like, I really don't want to be talking to people even in between rounds because of how important the tournament is. And it's like, all it takes is one player to interact with a fan in a negative way.
Yeah.
And that fan to be like, yeah, I went to a B-dubs location and the round was a complete dick to me. And I'm just like, well, yeah, I just lost and got eliminated for something I practiced for 3 months, you know, and played for to qualify for 3 months. I just gotten basically eliminated out of contention. And like, you came up to me you had Buffalo Wild Wing sauce on your fingers and you tried to shake my hand. It's like, of course I was a dick, you know, but like,
great job, man. Like, got all this buffalo sauce in his mouth. That would, holy
and I'm
crap.
Just sitting there thinking, this guy's a problem with the world.
Yeah.
It's just interesting, I guess.
It's definitely, I mean, absolutely. And the thing for me is that if it's not much more than just a viewing experience for the people going anyways, then why go to all the, you know, this extent to have all of this stuff planned? And it is a way to maybe get the firesides going even more, and just, you know, just these kind of local events by forcing it with this type of thing. But the net result is I'm just wondering if all of this planning and all of this stress and all this crazy stuff they're going through is really worth it in the end. You know, it's like, you know, one thing they could consider is just bringing all 66 people somewhere. I mean, it's expensive, but you could bring some, I think that's probably the most ideal thing is actually bring people somewhere. Or you just have them play from home. Why didn't you have them play from home?
Like, well, we talked about that before, right? Like, the playing from home, like, enables more cheating, but there was already cheating still going on. Okay, we talked about this on the one show we covered, the HGT. But they did move the Tavern Hero qualifier online, and it happened weeks before, so they don't have a Tavern Hero on Friday. They don't have something that's, like, holding them back. So they have definitely acknowledged that logistically that was something that in person didn't really make much sense, and they moved it to an online competition. So, yeah, I mean, we're moving to the point where – that's why it's so interesting, right? They want to make prelims more of a –
they want it to be an experience. And I understand that, but if you're going to go that route, you need to really
sell it.
I mean, this concept of having a bunch of different sites around the US or whatnot, it's kind of cool. Yeah, I kind of get it, but logistically it's like it's a nightmare, I'm sure, on their end. So why not just pick like three sites, maybe figure out travel accommodations for those people, the three sites, because it's just whoever you're closest to, whatever you're closest to. And if you can drive there, great, you know, that sort of thing. And then just kind of create that controlled, more of a controlled environment with only three sites versus, you know, we're looking at 20 here, right? And that's worldwide. And worldwide, we have got like 60, 70 or something like that. And yeah, of course, that's a logistical nightmare, having to deal with all those innkeepers and things like that.
I mean, you do want people to be accessible. So then you start painting a spectrum where it's like three venues or 70 venues. It's like, well, I only have to drive 4 hours now. That's great. And then you start, and no matter where you go on the spectrum, you also have to ask yourself, is it better if it was online? Like, even though people can cheat and play in calls, is it better if it was just online? Like, once you start talking logistics and you start getting into, like, this, you know, this type of deal where it's, like, people can't even go because the traveling will take too long, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, and people have to invest. I mean, they could potentially be losing money out of this. And, you know, saying before the show, we were talking about even just, like, minimum prize for each of the folks participating in prelims. It probably should be higher. It's like $100 right now. And given that people will have to buy plane tickets, or at least some folks will have to buy plane tickets and a hotel stay, they could easily be out $500.
Yeah, I mean, the majority of people shouldn't be losing money to compete in something that they earned.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
That's it, yeah.
That's a bigger... That gets into a whole nother area.
We can talk about, we could probably talk about
that. But Clash Royale did just announce their competitive circuit, so.
Oh, really?
They have 1 million in prizing per month.
Per month? Well.
Yeah. Well, they make a lot more money.
Yeah, they do. Supercell makes crap load of money. Yeah. Make millions per day, so it's all good.
They make 2 million. Like, yeah. Just over 2 million a day, yeah.
Exactly.
But Hearthstone made, in theory, like one third or one fourth as much, or I think it's one fourth as much. You start like really thinking about it, and it's like, well, they made 500 mil last year, so they don't make anywhere near Supercell money in that regard. But they're not making money.
Yeah, you know? They're doing just fine. They're definitely doing just fine. All right, well, we'll see how it plays out. What's the dates on the prelims?
Oh, that's a whole nother thing, is that somehow, though they organize it where, you know, one region goes, the next week another region goes, somehow they managed to give America Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, wow. Okay. So last weekend of May.
Why? I know it's been consistent that it goes Europe, America, APAC, but you'd think, like, maybe we don't want America playing on a holiday weekend like that.
Or maybe they think people can travel. Maybe it's easier to travel.
I know some people that didn't even try because they already had plans. You know, some older people, like obviously I'm younger, so for me it's like, this is what I do. But if you're like someone who's like good and you're in your like, you know, early 30s, maybe you have more family stuff, you know, so it's like
tougher. Yeah. Okay. So last weekend of May, at least for NA, and it sounds like the other regions are before that. So NA's last, I guess.
And it's before APAC, but it's after Europe.
Oh, is it before? Okay, cool. So right in the middle. All right, well, good luck to you guys. I'm sure you guys will do well next time. You know, we'll have you on when you've won, or you guys are both going to the to BlizzCon. That'd be great. But before we move on, I want to give a shout out to a bunch of just the patrons and as well as the folks listening on iTunes. Those you didn't know, whoa, what is that? Okay. For those of you listening or didn't know that Valuetown is available on iTunes too if you enjoy just audio podcasts, listening on the way to work or anything like that. And if you want to help out and you are one of these people, you can just go and leave us a nice review. It helps people find Valuetown when they're searching for Hearthstone podcasts. I want to give a shout out to a few of those folks that have left us 5-star reviews and nice notes. Chaos Logic, Climber Boy, Mick Gruber, Word 198, and Disco Breaker. Also, I want to give a shout out to our patrons, of course, that support the show. And I mean, you guys are the ones that keep it going and, you know, keep the show going indefinitely. And you can, if you want or are interested in participating in the Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/valuetown. But I want to give a shout out to our legendary producers, Mike T and Richard S, as well as a few others, Anthony L, David H, Seb C, oh, Seb S, Cameron M, Atomic Junkie, Paul H, Jeff B, Tim K, and Elwood P. We've also been doing Deck of the Week mini shows for all the patrons and only available to patrons, where we just pick a deck, usually a deck we talk about during the week. And this week we're going to be doing Rogue, and everybody goes and plays, just kind of tells their experience every Monday. So if that's something that you think you'd be interested in, we'll probably give you some more details in the coming weeks with it. But we just started that up last week and it seems to be something that the patrons have been having a good time with. And also, you know, just we have a quick video just from a word from our sponsor, Ting, and we'll be right back. All right. I love that commercial. I think I say that every single week, and it sounds like it's completely planned, but it's not. But okay, why don't we do our class spotlight now? We've got a rogue. We're going to be talking about rogue this or today. And those of you who might not have checked out the last couple weeks, what we do during these spotlights are we talk about decks, kind of like we always do in Valuetown, and then maybe talk about some key cards in each of the decks. And with Rogue, you know, for the most part, there's been some Tempo Rogues too, but mostly Miracle and Quest have been the two decks that have been played, at least since the expansion's been out. So yeah, I just maybe a quick, you know, just a minute or two, like, what do you guys think of the Rogue class right now in the current meta? Saiyan, you want to start off?
I mean, there's little reason to be playing Miracle Rogue over Quest Rogue. Mm-hmm. Maybe just like the style more, but Quest Rogue overall just seems a lot stronger. And there's recent versions that have been slightly tech to be better against aggressive decks as well. So, mm-hmm. You know, in terms of suffering the classic Rogue failure where you just get stomped by Pirate Warrior or something like that, there's not really been a good solution to it, but Quest Rogue has maybe a slightly better chance now because of things like the 4-mana Sunwalker card with some of your elementals.
Yeah, I think we're going to be talking about that card, which is a very interesting addition. How about you, Rat?
Yeah, so Miracle Rogue is probably, even with the Stone Shaper tech, better than Quest Rogue versus aggro.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that'd be one reason why you pick it over Quest Rogue. But the thing is, it's so much worse than Quest Rogue versus control decks or even mid-range decks. I think that's because of the lack of like a good win condition coming out of the Miracle Rogue. Mm-hmm. Like the Leroy combo is as potent as it used to be with an increase in taunts across the board.
Yep.
And Arcane Giant just isn't reliable as a win condition versus control. So unless you're trying to like get a little bit higher percentage versus aggro and you're okay with the worst percent against control, it doesn't seem like you should be bringing a Miracle Rogue anytime soon. As far as Tempo Rogue goes, a deck that I like and I played before, it's a lot better versus aggro. I don't think we're going to see it anytime soon, but I don't know. Maybe it'll sneak in there. It's interesting because in tournaments, if you bring Rogue, a lot of lineups just ban it.
Yeah,
and if they don't ban it, that means they're probably aggro. And if they're aggro, maybe you just make your rogue better against aggro, which is the idea behind the Stone Shaper. And then you bring another deck that control wants to ban, so then they have to choose which deck they want to ban.
I mean, you saw that a lot at DreamHack Austin as well. Like, I think Alan and another person in Top 16 brought Miracle Rogue instead of Quest because decklists weren't revealed in the Swiss rounds. So if they didn't ban the rogue, then Miracle did a lot better for sure.
Yeah. And well, we can talk about the Miracle first. And my experience, at least, you know, just playing in the lower levels, kind of just to get a feel for what was good. Because I knew at the top levels, Quest Rogue is just, I think, a lot better. But I think, you know, in the lower levels, I felt like there's just so many aggro decks that I was just losing, like, just, you know, like match after match after match with Quest. And it was pretty frustrating playing Quest Rogue. So I felt like Miracle was better at the lower ranks. And then as you're ranking up, you kind of like flip. If you only want to play Rogue, obviously, you kind of make that flip once the control deck starts showing up a bit more. But why don't we talk about the Miracle deck first and just some of the key cards and, you know, maybe certain elements of how to play it and things like that. What do you think are some of the big cards?
Well, I love Sharazin. I'm sad that, like, the Rogue Quest... I'm sad that if Quest Rogue didn't exist, Miracle Rogue would probably be played and Sharazin would be seen more often. But I think that Sharazin's, like, one of my favorite cards. I like the effect in other games as well of, like, bringing it back. And I just love... I don't know. Nothing makes me happier than playing against somebody who, like... plays a spell, then realizes they have to trade their Sharazin, and then plays like three more spells, and then play four spells because they didn't trade their Sharazin at the beginning of their turn, because they didn't plan out their turn from like the start, and then they get punished. I just love it. And I think that the card's like kind of skill intensive. It creates another element of play that allows you to add value by saving cards, not because of what they do, but because of what, you know, Sharazin does as when it's dormant. So
yeah,
I really like the card.
Man, when you make mistakes like that, that's game losing, because reviving Sharazin is such a huge part of this deck, too. Saiyan, what do you think?
I mean, that's where Miracle Rogue kind of feels like it stumbles. It's like you have so many things as a new player. Like you see, you have Questing, you have Sharazin, you have Gadget. You have so many things that require you to save resources that it's hard to figure out like how the game plan's going to work out, because you might not draw the Gadget, you might not draw the Questing, you might not draw like Sharazin. So your game plan changes a lot for Miracle Rogue. It's not... It's definitely more dynamic now, especially because you have like Hallucinations and Swashbuckler. So when you play the deck, it feels different every game almost. You have similar win conditions through Questing, through Edwin, and things like that. But you know, it just feels like it doesn't play out to the strict kind of draw your deck, go to Leroy anymore. You do have to elaborate a lot, and that's where like your power cards like Arcane Giant and your Mimic Pod and things that give you steam in the end just kind of round out the deck, so it's not as, you know, dependent on you saving your fuel, because you're going to have some reload here and there.
Yeah, there's definitely plenty of reload, like things like Hallucination too. I feel like without these type of decks, Hallucination probably would not be played at all, and it's kind of a cool card as to what you can get from it a lot of times. But because it plays out differently, I think that's one of the reasons why this type of deck is great for everyone to play. It's definitely much harder. Some people, you know, you'll probably lose a bunch in the beginning when you're first playing this, but after a while, you start to realize, oh wow, this is like a different way. You know, like this is Hearthstone played in a different way, and it's really cool. Just the outcomes are totally, you know, there's a variety of outcomes, which is cool.
It really is Hearthstone played a lot differently. Like the majority of people I don't think played two Questing Adventurers even from this list. But
what's
really interesting between like this Miracle Rogue and other Miracle Rogues is that you have you have Vile Spine Slayer, which is an insanely good value card.
Yeah.
But you not only just because you want to bring back Sharazin, but just because they kind of made cards that were good at doing this type of thing, like the little pedal guy, the 2/2 that gives you a pedal, Razor Pedal Lasher, like Hallucination, like you said, like Mimic Pod, they give you a ton of cards in your hand without drawing extra cards out of your deck, which creates like a situation for Miracle Rogue now where you have a bunch of cards somehow, but they're not like cards that work to make like Leroy attack your opponent for 30, you know, three times with Shadow Step and Cold Blood. They're cards that just like do different various things, sometimes randomly because of Hallucination and whatnot, that accomplish like your overall goal, which has been to like bring back Sharazin a bunch of times, or you know, draw a bunch with Gadgets in and then play Arcane Giant, or just like tempo your opponent out on various turns. And it definitely creates a lot of singular games, I'd say.
Yeah. And for those of you listening, just to give a quick rundown of the deck, it's backstabs, counterfeit coins, preps, hallucinations, patches, with the Swashburglar. With the Swashburglar, and then Thalanos, Eviscerate, Lasher, Van Cleef, Knives, Mimic Pod, Questing Adventure, SI Agent, Sharazin, Vile Spine Slayer, which I love that card, and then Auctioneer and Arcane Giant to round it off. I think we're gonna do this deck, guys, for Deck of the Week for those, you know, all the patrons listening. I think it's good for everybody to give it a try. And again, as you're getting higher, you're gonna probably start, you know, running into a wall with it. But you know, I think a lot of the folks are generally in the lower range, and we'll have some fun with it. Okay, well, why don't we talk about the Quest Rogue now? Let me bring that up real quick. And the one that we have here is, I think it's Oskaka's Quest Rogue.
6-0.
Is it 6-0? 6-0 had Oskaka on it. So
we
I
need
don't
to be very clear
it.
That it's 6-0.
Okay, it's
a joke about how Oskaka's.
Oh, is it? Okay, it's 6-0. Yeah, it's not Oskaka's then.
They stole it. They made it together, technically.
Okay.
I guess, or something. It's, yeah.
And this one is Prep, Shadow Steps, Fireflies, Glacial Shards, Patches, Deckhands, Boar, Cavern Below, Biofin Tidehunter, The Ferryman, Novice Engineer, Brewmaster, Igneous Elemental, Mimic Pod, Tolvir, Stone Shaper, and Vanish. And it's very similar to the one that's kind of popular, except for there's no Backstab, and what's the other thing that's missing here? Something else that's replaced. I forget what it is. Maybe one less Vanish, you know, the one that's kind of like popular, but hasn't been, I guess, had this innovation. But overall, yeah, this one, I think the biggest thing that stands out, obviously, is the Stone Shaper. So why don't you guys explain that change?
Well, the Stone Shaper has some elemental synergy, and it's really good to just stave off Avgro on turn 4 for the 3-mana, or 4-mana 3-5 with Divine Shield and Taunt. It's pretty insane. Mm-hmm. And even when the quest finishes, if you get it down again, it's still fine. But the upside, I don't think, is worth running, you know, say Tolvar Stone Shaper over something like Tar Creeper. If you want to be better against aggro, why not just take the guaranteed 3-5 on turn 3?
Yeah.
And it creates a wall, lets you do other things. And if they're an aggro deck, they have to trade with it anyway. So 3-mana Sundrance, not bad. And later on, like when you finish the quest and you play Tolvar later, like it's not guaranteed that you have 2 turns to, you know, like play an elemental and then play Tolvar the next turn, right? So sometimes that's a process as well. So yeah, I think Tar Creeper overall is just more consistent, but it's a card that 6-0 and Oskaka were trying out, and you know, it's sometimes hit or miss. Like you draw later on, it's maybe not that great. It's just slamming a Tar Creeper anyway.
I mean, Tolvir Stone Shaper, if it has Divine Shield, which it usually will, and with this deck against control as well, it's a lot better than Tar Creeper in that way. Like it's better.
Why are we talking about this as a control card? I mean, anything
I'm saying that
is
it's better.
Control.
I'm just saying it's better. Like you would just play Backstab, right? Like I'm saying, like there's a point at which the anti-aggro card is enough worse against the other decks that you stop playing it, and like that's where Backstab is, right? Like we don't want to play Backstab. Like I'm not saying this card's better or worse than Tar Creeper. I'm just saying that like on it's a spectrum, and that this card's good against aggro. Maybe it's not as good as Tar Creeper, but it's also better than Tar Creeper against control, probably. Because if you were just worried about being aggro, you would probably play Backstabs. Is what I'm trying to say.
I know what you mean by that.
As far as like there's definitely like when I talked to them and asked them about it, like they said like the 4-mana thing isn't as big of a deal because on turn 4 you're usually not doing as much or whatever, and you can just like drop it. I think it's interesting that they're... Well, I mean, like, if you want to take a turn off versus aggro, that's the turn you, like, want to take off. Because on turn 2, like, sometimes you want a dagger, and then on turn 3 you want to use, like, a South Sea or something, or, like, a Firefly, and then... But... And then bounce it back with, like, a bounce minion. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know, I think it's an interesting idea to, like, stop aggro decks. I haven't tried Tar Creeper, like, Saiyans suggesting... But the elemental part of this is pretty easy to activate in this deck. I will say that.
There's a good number. I mean, there's 2 Fireflies, 2 Glacial Shards, and Igneous Elemental also gives you more Fireflies too. So there is a good number. I've run into one case at least where I didn't play, you know, I didn't have one, and then I had the Stone Shaper, so it kind of sucked. But super, it's pretty consistent other than that. So, you know, which minion do you find the most common for you? Bouncing wise, You know, like, what is the thing that actually triggers the quest for you? Is there any specific one, or is it just like, you know, it's just like whichever one I get first, you know, because a lot of them are pretty darn good at it.
Against aggro, you just want to bounce Flame Elemental. And that's another thing, like bouncing Firefly will just generate overall like 3 more mana for you to be spending. The Novice Engineer generally is too slow in the fast matchups, but you can bounce Novice pretty consistently against your mid-range to control matchups.
Right.
For Rogue Mirror, you never want to bounce Novice, I think, unless you're going... If you're going second, then you can maybe speed up the clock by one turn, but generally Novice is not good to bounce in like Rogue Mirror as well.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of similar to like Patron, where it's like, I'm not surprised that you have problems with aggro versus aggro decks. Like, Patron, everyone played it, even though it's below 50% on the ladder. And Quest Rogue is actually the same thing. It's a high percentage of play, even though it's below 50%. And it's because it's just a hard deck to play. And choosing what to bounce is like an example. It's very easy for someone to be like, oh, what do I bounce versus X, you know, or aggro? What do I bounce versus control? But a lot of it comes down to your hand composition. Like, on average, you don't want to bounce Novice Engineer, like, no way. But if your bounce spells in your hand are Shadow Steps, then it becomes much more reasonable to, you know, activate a Novice Engineer 4 times, as opposed to, like, if you have to use it with, like, a Brewmaster, because Brewmaster costs 2 mana. So then it's like, it really comes down to your hand composition pretty often, but generally Sand's definitely right. The Novice Engineer is just not quick enough against aggro, especially if you have to use even, like, if you have to use 2 bounce guys, like, you're done. Like, there's just no way. Like, maybe if you get to play a Novice Engineer, Shadow Step it twice, and then, like, get a Glacial Shard in there or something, and then, like, play, like, the other Novice Engineer that you drew or something. Like, it's just... It definitely depends on your hand texture, for sure. But
and you're mulliganing for the bounces, for the most part? What do you
mean? I guess if you're playing against like a really aggressive decks, like Pirate Warrior, Aggro Druid, I think your best keeps are just finding the South Sea deckhand. It's like the number one priority. Potentially, you could keep a 2-mana bounce, but something like Glacial Shard and Firefly are fine in that matchup. You don't have backstab, so it's really just about the 1-drops that help you contest early on, because the bounce plan doesn't come in effect until you start stabilizing a little bit.
Right.
You could have some insane hand where, you know, you could have like 2 Shadow Steps and you're just looking for 1 bounce effect, then that's fine. Then you can bounce whatever you find. Like, if you're really high on the low-cost bounce effects, and it's okay against aggro, but for the most part, you just want to fight for board early on. Like, half the time you're playing Firefly instead of Quest on turn 1.
Right.
A deck with Igneous Elemental does better than a deck without Igneous Elemental, because you don't need to ever bounce the Firefly, so you can just like save the little 1/2s.
Just play
until
naturally.
You play the quest and then play them all. Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't need to bounce them
more efficiently on minions, basically.
Right. Your curve against aggro is just like Firefly on 1, turn 2 dagger, turn 3 igneous, and then maybe like turn 5 you start playing quest and flooding.
Right.
After you stabilize a bit. Because then at that point, they know you have the mana, so like maybe they'll choose not to play around prep, you might not have prep, and then you get a little bit punished, but if you go for it, then they have to play around it. So like the things on board even buy you some extra health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're focusing a lot, guys, on the aggro matchup, because that's the matchup that this loses to. This almost doesn't lose to anything else. So
Once you start adding the Igneous Elementals, you have so many minions versus control. Like, right. It's tough to like get outvalued in that matchup. Like, you can see it happen, but it's something that A, doesn't happen very often. B, it'll probably be because you overextended into a brawl or something. Like, you'll very readily understand why you lost against control usually when you lose against control. Yeah, and because it's had, like I said, the Biofins are 2 5/5s, and it also has the Igneous Elemental. It just has you just have so many 5/5s.
Yeah, not to mention 5/5s that just hit you in the face when they're played too. So Vanish can really, really kill you quick too. All right.
One of the interesting things I found was when you play Mimic, a pot on curve, it's one of the highest win rate cards in the deck.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Which is why I think that they don't want to play Tar Creeper.
That's a good point.
Because they want to use the 3-mana up on turn 3. And then Tolvir. But if you Mimic Pot, obviously you can't play Tolvir, so...
But you're not playing Mimic Pot against aggro, right? I mean, that's only against slower decks. On curve?
Yeah. It's if you stabilize on turn one and two.
You might have to do it. If you mimic pod into 2/2/1s that have charged, that's not that bad. It lets you complete your quest. It lets you deal with the board. Mm. Mimic pod, it instead of drawing your two cards, it gives you two of the same cards, which in this deck means that it just completes your quest that much more often because you just get two of the same card, and you need to play four of the same card to complete your quest, you know?
Right.
So it just lets you shape your game plan into something that's a lot more efficient.
Cool. All right. Well, I don't... Are there any other last maybe comments about just Rogue or this deck? And otherwise, we can move on to some events that, that have been going on. Anything?
I'm happy that Tempo Rogue with Fintra is not good.
Oh, my God. Yes. That deck was obviously doing super well until the expansion. Speaking of Fintra decks, I was playing some Druid again, or at least not again, but playing some Druid with Fintra, which is something I hadn't played in forever since me and Purple first talked about Fintra decks and things. And it's pretty good, man. Mixing some of the egg with the Fintra. I don't know if you guys ever tried that.
I play a lot of aggro Druid.
Put the water package in that. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the aggro druids do play the Fintra package. They're kind of straying away from it now because I think they're actually going to come back to it soon here. But this is a little bit circular with the druid deck where the Murloc package isn't that great versus control.
Mm-hmm.
Vicious Fledgling is really popular right now.
Yeah.
And when that card goes unanswered, it just blows you out. It goes unanswered pretty often, which is nothing's more depressing than a druid opponent innervating a Vicious Fledgling. It feels even worse than Fintra because there's you get some hope there. Fintra, you're like, okay, well, I can't play a minion or I have to play a minion and I know exactly what's going to happen. I'm going to get wrecked. But with Vicious Fledgling, you're they innervate it out. And you're okay, well, maybe it won't get Wind Fury, but then it does. And then you're okay, well, it's only a 3/3 and then it gets three health and you're well, jeez.
It's like a freaking hyena all of a sudden. They're like these key cards with most of the classes now that just break your heart when you can't remove those minions on that turn. Whether it's Quest Adventure or Hyena or Vicious Fledgling. It's so funny. Yeah.
Which I really don't like as a general thing. It's one thing when you can save. It's one thing when you're okay, well, Tyrion's what beats me, or Rag Lightlord's what beats me, so I'm going to save my removal that I've accumulated over the first 8 turns of the game. I'm going to save it for this minion that comes out on turn 8. But when the minion you have to remove, otherwise you lose, is early in the game, like Undertaker, for instance, was, then it's well, actually, I could have gotten a Wrath, but I didn't, and now we're here.
Right. All right, well, why don't we move on, talk some EU versus China. Have you guys been watching the event much this week?
It's on at a super early time.
I know. It's really, really important.
I think Rat's definitely caught more of it than I have.
Okay.
I haven't.
You haven't?
I don't even sleep. So.
It's been pretty good. I haven't caught, I wouldn't say I miss the beginning of it, obviously, every day. But I've been able to catch the last few. We've got random noises today on the show. But cats are obviously a bonus, though. Definitely a bonus. Overall, I feel like the community has been loving the event. Production seems to have elements to it that we haven't seen in other events, including HCT events.
Production is great.
Yeah. Things being progress on the quests, they show those things for each player, on the overlays. Cards.
They've got Yogg counters, they've got how many cards left in the deck. The mana curve shows the amount of spells versus minions, and they do these really cool poses as well. And it's above and beyond in terms of production. It's pretty insane.
It's a very Asian approach to the production. If anyone watched the OGN back in the day, they did a lot of this stuff too. Not all of it, but a lot of it. And it's something that we tend not to favor in our production, not because we hadn't thought of it necessarily, but because we kind of like the cleaner. Intuitively, we like the cleaner view, but maybe it's something that we should consider. The Yogg counter, those types of things, like all the extra things. But you have to draw the line somewhere, I think. Well, I definitely like seeing it. It's interesting to see it for the first time, right?
Well, I think I kind of agree with you with the whole cleaner type of view. I mean, I think generally speaking, when you're talking about, you know, overlays and spectator, you do want just the minimal amount of information given to the audience. But I think the minimal amount of information given to the audience is not there yet. Like, we aren't giving enough information. So the casters, there's so much stress on the casters, and people blame them for things sometimes. And it honestly, like, I feel like they're having to take on way more much of the load than they should be. And so things like, you know, having these counters all visible to the audience, it allows you to kind of create or figure out what the setup is right now, you know, and just like maybe what the crazy epic things are about to happen are. So I feel like much more of this is needed in a lot of the Blizzard productions too. So hopefully they learn from that. And I wonder how they're doing it too. Like, is it a lot of that coming from the log file, or are, you know, some of these things actually manually being kept track of, you know?
And
you think it's manual? Oh god.
I mean, even with the last prelims, yeah, or not prelims, but the Bahamas production, for instance, was obviously really good. Like, anybody who's like trying to slight the other production, like, the Bahamas production was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, they had like the interviews with Frozen, and they were like interlacing them within his game. That's not easy to get that, all those interviews, and get them packaged and deliver them to you like that so readily. Yeah.
That's cool.
That's the next level. Like, that's the next level of production that we're gonna reach when we start hiring. Like, when Blizzard starts hiring these bigger companies, like, you're gonna get those interviews interlaced and transitioned with like times where it's happening. Like, not necessarily the little listen-ins that no one really is a huge fan of, but yeah. So there's definitely some production things that
the listen-ins, really, people aren't a fan of the listen-ins.
Like, I mean, like, listen-ins? Not the listen-ins at like the ESL, like the team tournament.
I was gonna say, people love that. Listen-ins,
like when they show a clip of like Amnesia talking about why he keeps.
I see what you mean. Yeah. Those are hard to time too. Like, you're waiting for them. You're waiting for the game to actually make this something that you can use, right? It can be a challenge from that standpoint. But the point is that the EU versus China, like, the production.
Yeah, I think the production is really good. I'm definitely interested to see what things we take from that. But usually, like, there's been other tournaments with that before, like I said, and we just haven't adopted some of the
Well, there have been a lot of things that I feel like, even just one little thing I have to say about the EU versus China that I did a long time ago with Deck Wars, which was, you talk about the decks, like, you actually show the decks that the two players are playing beforehand so that the audience can absorb just what the decks look like instead of literally seeing them come, you know, into their hands. And then you can, you know, again, you can kind of formulate what the key moments can be like in that matchup. So I think they're not putting the decks right next to each other. They have key cards, I think, listed one at a time. But things like that, we should be doing that. You know, we don't have to have like the 20 seconds of caster because there's too much talk stone. Like, you can actually do it.
They usually try to draw parallels as well, right?
Which, to be clear, it's not like we weren't aware of that. They have actively made the decision not to give deck lists or not give the cards in the decks. Like, this has come up before, and they've said that they've decided not to.
But why? I mean, everybody knows each other's
decks. That's what I'm saying. The question is why, right?
Yeah,
the
question is. Point.
But they actually think that it doesn't add to the broadcast as much as it takes away from, like, the excitement of, like, not expecting or something. Which I've always argued.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
Like, parlor tricks.
Yep.
Versus like having people actually interested in the competition, and that these two players, you know, it's a 1v1 game. So instead of having them interested in the competition, we have them interested in, like, you know, like I said, parlor tricks or something. Right. Like, oh, we didn't know that Black Knight was in his deck. Oh.
Right. You'd rather be surprised by the Harrison Jones top deck, I guess.
I guess, but it doesn't make sense because a lot of times the casters allude to it anyways. You know, when there's like, oh, yeah, you know, one of the changes they made here was this, that, you know, they're having to basically tell us some of the unique aspects to their deck already. So you might as well just show it to them so that we have full information and can frame it ourselves. So, anyways, that was just a little comment on that. Overall, I think the event's been great. Firebat and I think Soleil have been doing a good job, even though at times they sound a little tired given that the hours are just really, really bad for them. But I think the community's been loving it. Okay, Q&A, guys. Just kind of wrap things up with Q&A. We got a couple questions, emailed questions. Ahmed, who's our regular, asked if we could rank the quests in terms of what we think is the funnest design. Design in terms of objective and payoffs. So if we were to rank all 9 of them, how would we rank them from, I guess, the best to the worst?
Fun for who?
player. Just for us. Just whatever. Just
the player and the opponent.
Yeah, okay, so let's start with number one. Like, what's the most fun quest for you guys right now, or you think is the most fun design in terms of objective and payoffs? For me... What are the choices? I'm having to remember.
Like, I'm thinking about it.
I don't even play the quest
like,
that much
quest,
anymore.
There's
yeah.
Quest Warrior and there's Quest Rogue, but yeah. Those aren't fun. And then I'm like, Jungle Giants isn't a thing. Awaken the Makers isn't a thing.
It's got to be the Warlock quest. Like, Lucari's Sacrifice, there's so many cool things you could do with it if the game went long. Like, the 3-2s, they're demons. You could buff them. You
really?
Do
no, it's your choice?
Crazy
wow.
things with... Actually, it doesn't work with Argus as well because they spawn on either side, right?
I think time
Lucari sacrifice but, is yeah. so bad.
But it's such a grinding card.
It's
great.
Fun.
It has such a
fun.
Terrible inherent concept. But it's not fun if you can't ever complete it, man.
You can like, you cannot run any discard effects and just Deathwing your hand.
Yeah,
then,
Deathwing is the way
you
to go.
You get the Lucari sacrifice.
Honestly,
that's
I don't think that seems more reasonable than anything else. Like the yeah. problem with making the discard build is that you discard the other cards that discard. Eventually,
right.
Like you're going to be discarding cards that discard, and you need to discard a lot.
Well, that's why
and
you have to have the
if you discard and you don't even have cards in your hand, it doesn't even count. Which
yeah.
is
that's
why
that's why it's a fun quest. It's like you get to see if you're going to complete it one of these times. You know,
well, it's all
like,
these.
Oh man, I discarded my last discard.
I know. There's all these conflicting concepts that are going on when you're talking about trying to complete
yeah.
that quest, and that's what I've always said. Saying is that Deathwing, just nice and simple. Can complete the quest with one card, easy peasy.
Guaranteed.
Yeah, exactly. I think for me, it's
nothing like infinite value after we play.
God, I'm getting like a total brain fart. The mage one, the time warp one. The
time warp was great. Yeah.
The what is it called? What's the mage one? Oh my god, I just like it.
Open the way
out.
Gate.
Open the way gate. There you go. I think
open
that one's
way gate is probably the funnest for me to play.
Yeah,
but it's probably the least fun for my opponents to play against. It's probably even less.
I mean, who cares about what my opponent? You know, I don't really care about my opponent. I just care about how much fun I'm having, right? Okay, so
I mean, it's pretty good that Open the Way Gate isn't like tier one. Otherwise, it'd be like
oh,
way too aggressive
sure.
on control. It'd be another quest
sure.
all over again.
Yeah, I mean, it's already very, very close. I feel like to being broken. I mean, just not. I mean, I think generally the Time Warp is a freaking crazy broken card, but. It's like this close from actually breaking meta, I think. So they have to be super careful with it. Yeah, so ranking all nine, I'd say the best is that I'd probably just do like the best two and maybe the worst two. It's hard for me to actually really rank them. So best two is probably that one. And man, I mean, the druid one's pretty fun. It's just, it's hard as heck to actually, I mean, it's not good in the metagame right now, but it's kind of fun.
I haven't seen anyone be happy about the druid one.
I've seen it twice. I've seen it played twice.
It's just Aviana, basically.
I was watching on Skaka's stream yesterday. His opponent played it in the first round of the Open. And that's only the second time I've ever seen the card. The other time I've seen it was when I ran into my friend in real life. He was playing it. Like, I'd never seen Jungle Giants. His opponent played it, and then his opponent came into the chat later on. He was like, oh, I didn't know you were a streamer, man. And he's like, sweet.
Sweet.
And his chat was like, yeah, he just started playing recently. He's like, oh, so did I. And he's like, I really like my decks. I think they're pretty creative.
Nice, nice.
And like, obviously, they're like memeing the guy because he's Skaka's world champion. You know?
Right, right. All right, what's your second favorite then, both of you? You guys,
it's such a
mage is probably up there for me.
I like
definitely.
The mage quest, I guess.
Yeah,
honestly, if I'm being honest, I think they're all to be a complete negative Nancy here. I think they're all horribly designed. I would have liked if I felt more accomplished when I completed my quest. I don't feel accomplished when I completed my quest.
Well, it's funny with the quest. It's funny with the quest because I'm kind of happy and sad at the same time about how they're designed. I'm happy because they're not too powerful. You know, one thing that we were worried about, you know, even Rat, when you were on the show before the expansion, was that these quests would just dictate what was good. Everybody would just literally build whatever finished the quest, and we're playing like nine classes, and it'd be boring.
We currently live in that world, though. Like,
meta
is extremely defined by Quest Rogue. Like,
no, but that's
quest
just
Rogue
one quest. I'm talking about, but still, that's just okay. That's one quest. It's like there's been two viable quests, right? The Warrior one and the Rogue one. But the seven other ones have been not, you know, in contention at all.
And yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing, right? They're either going to be really good or just, like, awful.
Right.
Was, like, the
so
argument.
I'm happy that there is a mixture of, you know, some of the quests. Some of these quests were meant for more, you know, casual players or low-level players.
For sure.
And I'm happy about that they designed them that way, is all I'm saying. I mean, the Hunter, how wrong could people have been? Some people have been about the Hunter, which is hilarious. So overall, I think it's mission accomplished. I feel like some of these quests may come into viability once the next expansion's out. And
that part's interesting for me.
Yeah, that might maybe change my views on things. But yeah, even when I was playing, you know, I was playing Kazakus, or yeah, the Kazakus, a priest in Wild. I wasn't even playing quests in that, which is pretty crazy. So, yeah, some of these, it's going to take a lot, I think, for it to become
quest rogue might be my favorite, actually. I think the rogue quest is my favorite. I really like playing
just
the rogue
told me you
deck.
Hated it. Now you like it. Wow.
Well, I think you just like winning at this point.
Yeah, well,
what's
that's
fun
exactly
about
where I'm
rogue
about
quest?
To go. I really like the idea of almost dying to an aggro player, but then making 9/5/5s over like 2 turns, and then like just keep trading down. It's like they came this close to beating you, but then you stop them, and then every minion they play just gets annihilated, and then you just end up like 25ing them in 1 turn, and it feels very rewarding to just barely live against aggro. So I
it's
guess
it's definitely the hardest quest to play with.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah.
Like you only feel like it's rewarding because it's actually hard to navigate, right? Like
yeah,
compared to like Taunt Warrior, like yeah, I can play 7 taunts. Probably anyone
it's
can play
hard.
7 taunts.
It's very similar. It's very similar
hard.
To it's very similar to Patron in the way that like it when it works out and you get to Deathbite and to Interrage into Patron and your opponent doesn't have anything, it's very easy to win. It's very easy to win if I just complete my rogue quest and span the board. But usually in high level play, the other players you're playing against are good enough that they don't let that happen. Like, because
yeah, you're right.
Worse players make less optimal decisions. The games last longer on average usually, so that just means that something like the quest becomes more potent, I guess. And
yeah.
Like, and it's in the way that it can win when it just doesn't do anything. Like,
all right, so let's pick the worst quests. My least favorite quest is the Paladin one by far. I don't even think I've seen it yet. I don't think I've even seen. I may have seen one person play it. I mean, obviously, never got, you know, just pulled it off. But I barely ever see that quest. So I don't. Overall, I just think it's. I don't really love how it's designed. I know some people liked it because it's kind of like the pants design or whatnot. But I don't know. For me, it's just kind of like, you know, Hearthstone's made so that we can deal with any one single big minion, and it was never going to be that strong. And I don't think that's the kind of quest that gets stronger as more cards come out either.
I mean, I could definitely print a card that makes that quest.
Oh, I mean, come on. That not
if they brought down the card. If they brought down the mana cost on the Murloc guy, the Primophon champion, and made him like a 1/1, it might already be good enough, honestly. If that guy's just really good, he just costs a little bit too much mana.
The guy that gives you copyright of whatever you play on him. You know, he's definitely good. And to be honest, that quest would not even be doable without that guy.
yeah.
I mean, he's like literally, right? He copies all your buff cards. So there's no way like you can draw that much and put that many crappy ass buffs in your hand to pull it off. Sayan, what do you think of that quest?
I think that quest is a very valuable lesson to Hearthstone. It teaches you things about compromise. Like, you can't go all in on just Primophon and buffs because it never works.
Yeah.
You can't run like all the bad buffs, otherwise your deck is bad most of the time. Mm-hmm. So you have to end up running like valley buff cards like kings and things like that, and you have to compromise because you're going to finish the quest later, and you end up playing this mid-range deck with Galvadon, and you're like, okay, well, I might as well just play mid-range Paladin. Then you're compromising to the max, and you're like, okay, I might as well play like this kind of Murloc Paladin instead.
Right.
So you kind of get there in the end, but it's like, there are points in your deck building where you kind of learn a lot about how this card actually works.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I just recently started Hearthstone. I've been playing for about a month. And I've been wondering how to build decks. Do you have any pointers for someone like me? And then he's just like, trying to make a successful quest paladin deck. And then that guy just like spends like 3 weeks trying to make a successful quest paladin deck. And at the end of it, instead, he ends up figuring out how to build like the perfect
Murloc
deck or something.
I mean, it's a Miyagi thing, right?
It's an important. I think you're absolutely right about that. So yeah, for me, Paladin and God, what are the other choices, man?
The worst quest for me is the Warlock quest by far.
I don't like the Warlock quest either.
It baits people. Like, I have three friends who play in real life. We used to play Yu-Gi-Oh, and they all built, like, crafted it. And they were like, wow, this quest is going to be sweet. And I was like, no, it's bad. And they were like, nah, nah, nah. And I was like, no, trust me, it's not going to be good. And they were like, nah, 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 this can't be bad. And then they, like, all crafted it, and then they were all like, wow, we're so dumb. We all wasted 1,600 dust on this card.
It can be good, though. I still think Lakari Sacrifice can be good with another expansion. I just think right now it's like, man, I'm really going to have to navigate and jump through all these stupid hoops, and I can just play, you know, Murloc Paladin, you know, or Murloc something.
It's just you can add more clutch
mothers.
Why not?
Like, if you tone down the power of Quest Rogue in the next expansion, and you give Warlock, like, maybe one more good discard effect, suddenly, man, Lakari Sacrifice, it'll be there.
You want to make Lakari Sacrifice good? Give them a 2-mana card that says, when this card is discarded, add it back to your hand, and when it's played, discard a card.
I mean, you'd have to make it an epic instead.
You have to make Clutch Mother even.
Yeah, you have to make Clutch Mother an epic. I think that
Clutch Mother also has to discard itself. Like, Clutch Mother needs to also discard.
You don't have to discard itself. I think it's fine the way it is. I think that, you know, recycling is super important, because otherwise you're going to be killing yourself and discard. There's that whole conflicting thing where you don't want to discard stuff, but you have to discard stuff for this to happen. You know, it's. It's
if
so
they ever
crazy.
Took away random discard and made it like chosen discard, then maybe, because
ooh,
you just discard
that's
the Clutch
interesting.
Mother and punch, but then that's like a really sketchy
territory.
You can start doing some OP stuff. Yeah.
That's crazy powerful, yeah. But it's possible. I've still yet to see the portal. Have you guys run into anybody with the portal? I've never run into anybody with the portal.
I've seen it one time.
Okay.
They didn't play it again. I just seen it one time. No one's ever played it against me.
Have you seen it, Zayn?
I played once against it at the beginning of the season. I was playing Quest Warrior, and then they played Portal, and then I just couldn't beat it.
Really? Wow.
That's the one unfavorable interaction where, like, in the super long game, when you have one more X shot and he generates two minions a turn, it's just impossible.
The only time I've seen it was when I told you
that
my real life friend, what they were playing against each other with Quest Warlock decks. That's the only time I've seen it. They were playing against each other, Quest Warlock, and they were like, oh, my Quest Warlock destroyed your Quest Warlock. My deck's way better. They're like, this deck is sweet. And I'm like, you guys are only playing against each other, and you're only playing against other Quest Warlocks. And then they venture out to the ladder, that's and funny. Then they realize it's a sad world.
Yeah.
Full of Quest Rogues.
All right, well, why don't we wrap up? Kind of almost gotten to that hour 45 range. And for those other folks that wrote in some Q&A, I'll save them for next week, and we can read some of those. There's one that's like super long. I'm just trying to figure out how to paraphrase it from Lou. So Lou, if you're listening, I'll get to it next week. But fantastic show, guys. Why don't we do some shout outs here? The Rat, where can people find you?
You can find me at The Rat on Twitter and The Rat on Twitch as well. Shout out to Splice. Shout out to the
Splice, I think that's
the show.
Are you reading this? What are you doing?
No, I'm just sick, honestly.
Yeah,
shout out for the people who get sick after conventions, or who, anti-shout out to people who are sick and then go to conventions.
What do you call the dream hexing this? Because, you know, with the PAX one, they call it the POX, and, you know, things like that. I wonder what the dream hack.
Well, I don't even know if right now I think I'm getting hit by the allergies, like I told you guys before the show, but if you're sick and you go to conventions, I understand, but you still suck. I would do the same thing.
All right, Sayan, how about you? Shout outs and where can people find you?
Shout outs just to the team, Tempo Storm. Find me on Twitter at Tempo Sayan, or on Twitch, twitch.tv/justsayanhs. That's about it.
Man, we didn't even get a chance to talk to you. We didn't even get a chance to talk to you about the whole Tempo Storm and you guys 3 out of 4 at DreamHack, man. That was a freaking great DreamHack for you guys.
Oh yeah, shout outs to DreamHack for rigging the bracket. Perfect. Really good.
Good stuff. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Any other shout outs you got?
I guess shout out to Blizzard, because as bad as it looks right now, with the whole B-Dubs fiasco and the Wild thing, it seems like they're trying to like explore new areas in Hearthstone. They're trying to build relationships, which means hopefully the game is going to be here in a decade or so, at least 5 years. I mean, card games generally live a long time, and Blizzard kind of recognizes that. So, you know, it doesn't look like they're taking the route of StarCraft and just letting it die and revamping to the point where no one wants to play it anymore. So,
ow, seems good. Man.
I mean, Hearthstone's their most successful esport. Makes a lot of sense. They did a great job on the set. I don't know if I've been on since the set happened, but
the
set's great.
The set's been meta amazing.
Meta is great. Mm-hmm. It's, you know,
it's coming for the rat, guys.
I said the meta was good last
time. Big deal.
I said the meta was good last time.
Yeah.
Like, the meta's better than it was last time, for sure. But I'm saying if the meta's great, we got to find other things to complain about.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll always complain about something.
There's always something.
It's never perfect. Yeah.
But this is, you know, it's pretty, I wouldn't say as close as it gets, but it's pretty, it's definitely on the high end of things right now. And that's amazing. Lots of good work doing over there. And as much as we complain, we do need to give them kudos whenever things are going well. And this is definitely one of those times right now. So yeah, big shout out to Blizzard for that. To round things out, give a shout out to you guys for doing the show, The Rat and Saiyan. Saiyan, have you been on the show before? Did I have you on like a while ago? Long time ago? Or is this the first time?
I haven't. I've been reluctant because I live on a busy street downtown, so it's kind of...
It's all good.
He actually knows about a firehouse, basically.
Well, welcome to the show, man. I'm really happy to finally get you on here.
It's been a pleasure.
Been wanting to for a while. And everybody for watching. Of course, I want to give a shout-out to, of course, our sponsor, or one of the sponsor, Ting, for making this show possible, as well as the Patreons. And a quick word from Ting, they're a nationwide LTE access for T-Mobile and Sprint networks. And again, for those of you that are looking for a plan where there's no rate, there's no signed on for 2 years or anything like that, then Ting's a place for you, because you can leave at any time you want. You're just basically paying for all the data that you're using as you're going. And they're like number one customer service too. So you can, whenever you call in and have a problem, you'll be talking to a person. It's kind of nice, because I'm tired of talking to these like answering machines and having to type one and you go here, type three. So it's really, really nice when you do that. And if you go to value.ting.com, you can get a $25 off code, which is usually a free month on Ting. So definitely check them out. They're trying to do some more stuff in Hearthstone too. So, it's great to have more people supporting stuff.
And every one of their customer service members' voice sounds just like Saiyan. That's something you're into.
Call
in to listen to that gravelly sweetness.
That's a huge ad promo right there. Yeah, definitely. Of course, all the patrons, if you guys want, if you guys enjoy the show, want to support the show, go to patreon.com/valuetown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, any little bit, it really helps the show, guys. Helps the show continue on. So you definitely consider that. And we've got all these cool milestones. We've been like $1 or $2 off of Milestone for the last 2 weeks. So if you like Milestone, you can make that happen, guys. Other than that, you can check out Deck of the Week a little bit later, and the VOD's going to be up on. Yeah, exactly, right? If you want to check out the VODs for the show, you can check them out at youtube.com/championV for this episode, as well as all the previous ones from the weeks we've done them. But that's going to be it for Value Town this week, guys. So for The Rat, Just Saying, and myself, Champion V, we'll see you next time.